Good morning, everyone, on a beautiful, beautiful summer morning. How are you doing today? We're broadcasting here from Cause and Effect World, where we take facts seriously. We don't take ourselves seriously. We want to hear from you. The listener line is 617-237-1234. I want you to write that down because I know you have something to say about some of the things we're going to be talking about today. There's a lot going on in the news. Hopefully you're in the car on your way to the beach. Oh, how nice it is. And I hope to see some water later today. Today, I always like to look at the weather. High of 77 degrees here today, mostly sunny. Chance of a shower or two during the morning, they're saying. I don't know. Looks absolutely great to me. Followed by partly cloudy skies this afternoon. Low tonight, 56 degrees. In Baghdad, the high is going to be 120 degrees Fahrenheit. Low of 92, high of 120 degrees, and it's sunny. It's going to be sunny there. Tehran, high of 91. Kabul, high of 84. Mumbai, India, high of 82. Shanghai, a high of 93. In Tucson, where we're talking about all the immigration stuff, 86 degrees today. Beautiful day. Beautiful day down there. New Orleans, where they're still picking themselves up from the Gulf Gushing, the Gushing Gulf oil disaster, 98 degrees. And over there in the Middle East, Tel Aviv, 95 degrees today. So what else is going on? Did you guys hear about the sharks? There are sharks down off of Chatham. They've seen five from the air. There was one that was sighted within 100 yards of swimmers. So they've actually banned swimming at that beach, and obviously we're going to be keeping an eye on that, which, of course, is for those of us old enough to remember the movie Jaws. This is gonna scare some people again. The casinos. Did you know that the House and the Senate actually came to agreement on a casino bill, which they announced last night? And Governor Patrick is saying he may have to veto it because... So why? Why is Patrick against this? Well, because he was saying we wanted Foxwoods-type casinos, which are much smaller than what they are planning. They're planning these gigantic resort-style casinos, three of them, in this, from my perspective, pretty small state. Three casino-style resorts, and they're going to have two slot machines. And at the racetracks, and Patrick has said that the benefits we're going to get from these are not worth the social cost that is invoked from, or that is the result of gambling. I'd be interested to know what you think about that. Of course, the folks in the construction industry, the unions, have been very much in favor of this approach because, of course, they want the jobs. There are so many people that are unemployed in that industry as the economy tanked. Those are the people that were most likely to lose their jobs in the trades and construction industry. So what do you think about that? Are you in favor of casinos? Do you think there are other ways of creating the jobs? Then there's the consideration of the revenue we're going to get from them. Part of the reason why Patrick is saying he only wants one of the slot installations, I can't think of the right word for that, is because there isn't that much construction involved. And so he's saying, okay, well, we'll make it available to you so people don't have to drive all the way to Connecticut or all the way to New Hampshire or all the way to New York in order to play slots, but we don't want to have the volume that they're talking about. And a lot of people are saying that the amount of slots that are included in this bill is simply an indication of the power of the gaming industry and how they have been lobbying, spending money, spending time, getting people in the face of lawmakers, just putting pressure on them, kind of the squeaky wheel gets the grease kind of thing, in order to get these changes to the law. Would love to hear what your thoughts are on that. 617-237-1234. The other thing that's in the news is John Kerry and the yacht. John Kerry and the yacht was moored in Rhode Island. He said he hadn't taken full ownership of it yet, that he was intending to pay taxes on it when he took full ownership, when he brought it to the state of Massachusetts. And, of course, conservatives are all over this. They're going crazy. They're saying, oh, it's hypocritical, it's hypocritical. I would think that they would be cheering Kerry on. I would think, first of all, he's wealthy through marriage, which, of course, you know, all conservatives love that. I mean, isn't that the American dream, is that anyone who's wealthy has gotten wealthy out of their own smartness, cleverness, that they are the winners. They should be able to keep everything that they have. And they want to reduce taxes. So if the taxes are lower in Rhode Island, well, then, of course, you should do that. That's what conservatives say. I would think that they would say, well, it's a little ironic, but hopefully we realize that he learns from this. But, of course, no, they're going crazy about the so-called hypocrisy. And what Kerry is saying is, hey, I hadn't taken full ownership of it. And anyone who thinks that I'm trying to moor this thing in Rhode Island, thinking that I am delusional enough to believe that I could sail it around Massachusetts without somebody noticing that it's moored in Rhode Island. If anybody thinks that I'm stupid enough to think that I can get away with that, well, I'm sorry, but it was an oversight. I just hadn't gotten to it. Probably I should have been faster about it. This is a non-issue. And I have to say, I don't think John Kerry is stupid enough to think that he can actually get away with mooring his yacht, his $7 million yacht in Rhode Island, in an effort to avoid paying Massachusetts taxes. Do you? Do you think John Kerry is that stupid? I really don't think he is. He's got a lot of houses. He's got a lot of money. It's not surprising to me that a few things slip through the cracks here and there, and that it is not a matter of hypocrisy or tax evasion or anything else. I think he just didn't get to it, folks. So just wanted to put that out there, and hopefully this issue will simply go away. Yeah, he's got a lot of money. He married Teresa Heinz. You know, she had money. Should he not have married her because she had money, because it looks bad? Does that make any sense? Doesn't make any sense to me. Other things that are in the news, of course, sadly, Charles Rangel has been charged with ethics violation. They have decided that they want to give him a reprimand, which is a fairly mild response to what they said were his ethics violations. He, of course, is going to trial. He feels that he can defend himself. He does not want to go out under the cloud of ethics violations. Obama came out yesterday and said that it would be nice if he went out at 80 years old, if he retired, without having to go out under the cloud of ethics violations. That, in other words, we want to get this thing wrapped up rather than go through a trial. So it's very clear what the Obama administration wants. I mean, it's interesting that Maxine Waters, who I've always admired, could face an ethics trial this fall. And people who are familiar with the investigation are saying that the allegations could be announced next week. So Democrats, we are preparing for that. But isn't it interesting that two of the leaders of the Congressional Black Caucus are charged with ethics violations right before the election? I have a feeling that we're going to find more on that in terms of who's being targeted, why the targets are coming up at this time. The timing just seems to be a little bit interesting to me, and we'll find out whether these concerns about ethics are being uniformly applied. I have to say I'm sad about it, because these are people that I have always looked up to. Charles Rangel said, apparently over the weekend, that since he got back from the war where he soldiered heroically, he received medals, that he said that every day has been a good day since he got back from the war. And since he was charged with these ethics, he said he may have to revisit that, which is really, really sad. So what else is going on? Well, Chelsea Clinton is getting married in upstate New York, 400 people going to the wedding. Of course, everybody who wasn't involved, wasn't invited, is a little bit disappointing. There was one couple who said, "Well, I guess we were good enough to get an airplane ride, but we're good enough to borrow an airplane, but we're not good enough to go to the wedding." Well, you know, honestly, folks, can you imagine how many people? 400 people are invited to this wedding. Seems kind of crazy. We're going to be talking about immigration in the next segment of the show, the morality of immigration. And the angle I want to look at it is the reason why liberals and conservatives view immigration terribly differently is because of how they view morality in general differently. And where do those perspectives of morality come from? Is it simply a choice that people make about how they view the world? Or is it deeper than that? Does it actually go down into our fundamental personalities? Or is it our cultural experience? Or is it both? Is it both? What do we know about personality and our experiences that changes how we view who should come into this country and what we should do about the people that are already here? That's something that we're going to be looking at later in the show today. And other things in the news, the energy bill sadly does not include any price on carbon. You would have thought right now, after the disaster in the Gulf, that we would have been able to get this done. If there was ever a time to get it done, it was not done. And all I can say is the only possible explanation for that is the money and the time invested by the folks in the petroleum industry on making sure that it didn't happen. Because everyone now sees the potential risks involved with consuming petroleum. And, you know, again, getting into the morality of things, it to me, it is a moral question about whether or if we are consuming petroleum, should we have domestically produced petroleum or should we go to foreign sources? I mean, for those of us that are concerned about this, which the majority of Americans are, and they say, well, we don't want any deep water drilling in the Gulf. We don't want to drill in the Arctic. I mean, Sarah Palin was kind of trying to talk about this in her kind of convoluted, difficult to listen to way. But if ExxonMobil is causing a disaster similar to the Exxon Valdez disaster every other month in Nigeria, if the petroleum companies are not as careful in other places around the world, then shouldn't we actually want the companies to drill here where we can keep an eye on them? Shouldn't we tighten up those regulations, actually have audits, actually have an approval process that has some teeth, and then apply it to them, which would give us two benefits. One is it would decrease our dependence on foreign sources of petroleum, and two, it would create the safest environment for drilling. And three, it would be in our face, and so that would create perhaps the political will to investigate and fund alternative sources of energy, which is what China is doing, We, I feel, really need to get on the stick on that. Republicans voted against the small business law because they wanted to be able to vote on separate amendments, so they voted against the entire thing. These are the people who supposedly champion small businesses at every turn. They voted against the law. And it really does, you do get the impression that they simply want to block anything that the Democrats propose. And the thing that's so incredible about it is that Democrats have a huge majority in the government right now. I mean, the country voted for Democrats. What Democrats don't have is the 2/3 majority in order to shut down filibustering, and everybody keeps talking about that. But Democrats have a huge majority compared to the Republicans. And so by Republicans blocking everything, they are thwarting the will of the American people at this point. I mean, obviously, there are some people who are against it, but they are a small minority compared to the number of people that support Democratic causes on this. And then, of course, we've got the WikiLeaks. We've got the private working in military intelligence who apparently uploaded these documents to WikiLeaks or made them available to WikiLeaks. They put them on their website. And if you haven't heard about this, but it was reported in the paper this morning that they are now investigating some students here in Boston who they think may have helped. This particular private on home leave last January visited the Boston area and had and spent some time with these friends, some at MIT and some at Boston University, and they are actually now looking into it. So again, we have local repercussions of an international issue. I'd be interested in knowing what you think about that as well. Should they have put these documents on the website? What should happen to these students, particularly these students here in Boston? If they knew of it, should they have reported it? Would you have reported it? If you had a friend who said, there's a lot of stuff about the war that's not being reported, and I feel like I need to expose it, believing themselves to be doing something like the Pentagon Papers, would you have reported them? I've heard some analysts say that this is not like the Pentagon Papers because, in fact, the documents don't actually share any news that we don't have. They weren't official documents. A lot of them were drafts of things. The Pentagon Papers were official, vetted, published internal documents that say the government knew. That said, the government knew that the government had been lying. This is not the case. These are not official statements, official position papers, official documents. So a lot of people are saying that's what's unconscionable about this. And then besides the fact that names were named and people were put at risk. So what do you think about the WikiLeaks publisher who says that it is more important for anything to be revealed? What should happen to the WikiLeaks editor? Because, in fact, he was an editor. He made decisions about what things he was going to publish. There were 90,000 documents that were published, but there were many, many, many more that were not published. So he was making choices about what to make available. 90,000 documents, it's almost impossible to imagine that he actually read all of them. So what are your thoughts on the WikiLeaks? Should he have published all of those documents? 617-237-1234. You're listening to the Samantha Clemens Show. We're here. I want to hear from you about the casinos. Do you like casinos? Do you support building the casinos? Do you want three resort-style casinos? We're talking Las Vegas-style casinos here, as far as I know. Do you want slot machines all over the place? Is it important in order to fund government? I mean, have you noticed that the things that people kind of support, the sin taxes, gambling, cigarettes, alcohol, are all addictive substances? Or, you know, they all have an addictive component to them. So in other words, things that a certain segment of our population find very difficult, if not impossible, to quit, that's what we tax. Instead of taxing something that we all use, or that we all have, like our income, we want to tax the thing that some people can't quit and that we ourselves probably don't use. I mean, generally speaking, smokers don't support a tobacco tax. I mean, I suppose a lot of people drink, but not that many people drink to excess. And now gambling. How many people who actually gamble support this, the casinos versus the people that don't gamble? Or is this one of those things where it's the opposite? That people who don't gamble don't want it here, and people who do gamble want it here, and they are just willing to live with the collateral damage. Would you want a casino in your town? 617-237-1234. These are the things that are on my mind this morning. When we come back, we're going to be talking about immigration and the morality of immigration and how conservatives and liberals view the world and how that explains why the emotions are so intense about that issue. When we come back here on Revolution Boston, this is the Samantha Clemens Show. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. You're listening to the Samantha Clemens Show here on AM 1510 Revolution Boston. I hope you're having a great day today, enjoying this beautiful summer weather if you're here in the Boston area. Thanks for joining us. The listener line is 617-237-1234. We are talking about the morality of immigration and how it is that morality informs how we feel about immigration, the solution to immigration, immigrants in our society. And in order to think about this, I came upon some research that was done by this guy named Jonathan Haidt. I know, isn't that a strange word? I think Haidt is how you pronounce it, H-A-I-D-T. If somebody knows, give me a call. And he says that people vary in terms of how they feel about morality in some pretty profound and substantial ways. So, for example, he says, if you know that two people, Bill and Bob, let's call them, recently got married, and you have somebody whose reaction is, oh, that's fabulous, that's wonderful, I'm so happy for them, and you have another person who reacts and says, oh, I'm really uncomfortable with that. Oh, I wish that didn't happen. Oh, I don't even want to hear that. Which one of these people do you think voted for Obama? And which of these people voted for George Bush or John McCain? What do you think? And it's so clear that how people feel about certain things is very, very highly correlated to some of these moral issues. But morality isn't the only thing. It also has to do with how we feel about a whole range of issues, including casinos, including, you know, the Tea Party, including giving unemployment benefits to people. Is that these things are driven by our moral views. And liberals tend to think that conservatives are just being selfish about a lot of these things, or just being, let's face it, just being stupid. Whereas conservatives think that liberals are being immoral. And both sides oftentimes view these things in moral ways. And this guy, Jonathan, has come up with what he calls this moral foundations theory, which this theory is trying to understand why morality varies so much across cultures. And yet there are very, very similar themes. So in other words, he did studies around the world. Countries, developed countries, developing countries, poor people, rich people, rural people, urban people, all over the U.S., all over the world. And what they found, what this theory proposes, and let's go back and start talking a little bit about the difference between a hypothesis and a theory. A hypothesis is an idea or a hunch. It's a fairly well thought out idea. A theory is something that's been tested, that other people have replicated it, that fully understand it. So this isn't just some idea. This is something that's actually been tested. And what we found is that there are these intuitive ethics, these things that people, these ideas that people have within themselves, and it actually shapes how they view the world. And liberals tend to judge whether something is moral or immoral on two factors. Number one is, are you harming anyone? Are you inflicting pain? And this foundation underlies, you know, kindness and gentleness and nurturance, as well as avoiding harm. So in other words, if you are hurting someone, if you are explicitly hurting someone, that is immoral. One of the other factors is, are you fair? Fairness. Are you reciprocal? Is it do unto others as you do unto me? Or you know, you are supposed to do unto others as you would have them do to you. And this foundation, you know, within this foundation, you have justice and you have rights and you have autonomy. And so, in other words, liberals say, if I can trust you, if you are fair, if we can cut a deal with each other, if I can trust you on that basis, that is moral, that it is immoral to break a contract, for example, or to say you're going to do something and then not follow through. So for liberals, those are the two dimensions, and as long as you meet both of them, people consider you to be a moral person. But there are three other foundations that many people around the world think are just as important as these two. And one of them is in-group or loyalty. And this is the foundation that is connected with ideas of patriotism and sacrificing for the group. That the group is more important than any individual, and the members of the group are much more important than the members outside of the group. And that's the key distinction, is that it is immoral to treat people outside of the group at the expense of people in the group, that is considered immoral. I mean, this is really what drives tribalism. I mean, at a very simple level, you can look at Red Sox and Yankees, is that you don't go doing nice things for Yankees. You don't take money away from Red Sox fans and give them to Yankees fans. I mean, that's just immoral, right? So, but it's interesting because so anytime it's one for all and all for one, that's the idea there. And that is why it is moral to defend your country, to sign up for the military and defend your country, that is more important than anything. Whereas liberals are uncomfortable with that idea. A lot of times you will see that liberals are more likely to say, I am a global citizen. We need to eliminate borders. I've been having this discussion with this kind of wacky guy. Wacky guy, if you're listening, you know who you are. Who says that the border should just be eliminated and everybody should be able to travel all over the world as they will. That's taking this to an extreme, which is that you don't have any in-group, you don't have any loyalty to the group, that it is that the loyalty is to every citizen on earth. Now, I've always said that if we were invaded from someone from another planet, that our in-group would immediately become all of our fellow citizens on the world. But for now, we still have a nation-state system. So this is a difference between how liberals and conservatives view things, and as you can imagine, this then has an impact on how we view immigration. One of the other dimensions, one of the other factors, is authority and respect. Hierarchy. How do you feel about hierarchy? Within this paradigm, this is where you start thinking about leadership and followership, that it is immoral to be a bad leader. A leader sets the vision, organizes the troops, and executes effectively and efficiently. The followers are expected to execute that vision, to follow that vision. It is immoral to be a bad follower under this foundation. So think about it. The concept of question authority, something that is near and dear to a liberal's heart, that they feel is the ultimate in patriotism, is considered immoral on the part of conservatives. That they believe that it is a threat to our very existence because it indicates that people are not good followers. And finally, the fifth dimension is purity and sanctity, which is shaped by the psychology of disgust and contamination. So this foundation kind of underlies religious ideas, ideas about homosexuality, ideas about sexuality, which is that for liberals, this doesn't matter. As long as I can trust you, as long as you are not doing any harm, consenting adults, it is not my place to judge. I stay completely out of this. For conservatives, no, one of their foundations is purity and sanctity. Now, there's some indication that for liberals, food has become an issue that for liberals is part of this purity sanctity definition. Consuming animals, eating the wrong kind of food, whether or not it ties into overconsumption, which kind of gets into the doing harm bit. But what I want to hear from you is, first of all, which of these things resonate? If you are a liberal, what do you think about the in-group, out-group paradigm? Is that something that resonates with you? If you're a conservative, do you say, yes, yes, hierarchy is important in our society, that it is up to us to be good followers if we are not put into a leadership position? Does this idea of purity resonate with you? Now, what they found about a lot of this psychology is that people who are open to new things, open to ideas, open to new experiences, tend to only look at the first two dimensions. Can I trust you? Are you doing anyone harm? And that's it. Now, people who are less open to new experiences are conservatives, and therefore they are going to be more concerned about these other things. Now, the argument that this Jonathan Haidt says is that these, all five of the dimensions, have been a part of humans thriving all across the planet, all the way through our entire evolutionary history. And the danger that liberals create by ignoring the other three foundations is anarchy. In other words, all five of these foundations created stable societies, and that what conservatives are concerned about is losing that stability. That stability is the foundation on which everything that we know and love in this society rests. If you lose stability, you lose everything. So, what do you think about that? 617-237-1234. I mean, beyond that, when he did the studies, what he found is that consistently across the planet, the people who, the liberals, the two foundation folks, were located in urban areas, were located in places that have a lot of trade, that have a lot of interaction with each other. And that they basically kind of discarded the last three of the things, the in-group, out-group, authority, and the purity ones. Whereas people, the more you were from a rural area and therefore were more socially isolated and therefore less exposed to new experiences, less exposed to new ideas, the more likely that you were holding on to the five foundations, which makes you more conservative. So, Samantha, you ask, what the heck does this have to do with immigration? Well, obviously, from a conservative standpoint, immigrants are by definition not in their group. They draw the line at citizens for their group. And for them, authority, respect, hierarchy, deference to authority, deference to laws is a moral value. So in other words, all of these people who cross the border, it doesn't matter what's happening outside of the U.S. because they are not in our group. And not only are they not in our group, but they have broken the law. So they have actually violated two moral principles. And then the final thing is that they're different. They have different foods. They have potentially different values. I mean, I would think that, in fact, a lot of conservatives would welcome a lot of these immigrants precisely because they share a lot of the values in the purity sanctity dimension. What do you think about that? 617-237-1234. We've got Barry calling from Burlington who wants in on this. Barry, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Actually, I'm calling from Arlington.
Oh, Arlington. Okay, great. Hi, Barry. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to say that, I found it interesting when you were talking about these different levels that this person, Height, had written about. These, liberal morality, the notion of whether or not you're doing harm to someone, and the notion of fairness and justice versus loyalty as contrasted with loyalty, and notions of following authority figures, and then this whole other area of religiously based morality where the sanctity and purity are the main concerns. And I mean, myself, I'm a democratic socialist, so I'm certainly on the left, in the left spectrum, area of the spectrum in terms of moral and ethical beliefs.
Yeah.
I tend to think the primary consideration should be, does it hurt someone? Does it injure or kill someone? And, does it promote fairness and equality?
Now, what's interesting, though, is that, okay, so you said you're a socialist, you're a left socialist?
A democratic socialist, yeah.
Democratic socialist. Okay, so what's interesting about that is part of what underpins socialism is loyalty to the group, though.
No, perhaps an authoritarian or Marxian socialism, but in democratic socialism, I mean, prefatory, as its adjective indicates, it's democratic. It focuses upon, like the socialist and laborite parties of Western and Central Europe, the emphasis is upon, allowing each individual member to express their opinions and to, decisions are based upon consensus and upon debate and discussion. It's not this authoritarian notion as you had in Stalinism, where basically a vanguard group or I guess a central committee decides everything and everyone else is just supposed to obey them.
Yep. So how do you feel about the health care bill?
The health care bill here in Massachusetts or in the federal on the federal level?
Well, they're pretty similar, so either one.
I think it's rather inferior because it leaves the private insurance industry firmly in a position of great influence. I myself, for years now, I favored a single-payer Medicare for all healthcare system. That would seem to me to be a very good system. It would cover everyone. It would lower costs. People wouldn't have to, try and figure out which particular private health insurance company offers the best health insurance. I mean, it would simplify matters immensely, and everyone would be covered, regardless of ability to pay. So that to me would, one of the things that really bothered me when I heard about this ongoing federal legislation was that they were looking at the Massachusetts model, and to me that was a huge mistake. Massachusetts, I have to say, I think their model is rather, at least a lot to be desired.
Okay, so getting back to the dimensions then, for you it sounds very much like as a Democrat socialist that the first two are important to you and that the in-group, out-group thing is not as much of an issue for you. So what are your thoughts about immigration then? Where do you come down on what to do with the people that are already here, how we go about reducing immigration? Do you think applying the law is the most important thing, and so negative sanctions against the people who are here? Do you think there should be a pathway to citizenship? If so, what are your thoughts on that?
As I understand, the best solution, the most humane solution would be to grant amnesty to the, I guess, 12 million undocumented workers who are now in the country. I understand the argument that they're breaking the law and that these people are here illegally, but to my mind, it's like they're being driven out of their countries because of economic and social conditions that, in many cases, were the result of a free trade and, diplomatic policies that the United States had and has been pursuing for the past 50 years or so. I mean, it's like the workers who are coming here, they're coming here in many cases because they can't find jobs in their own countries, and that's because the United States, along with other industrialized countries, have supported these NAFTA and GATT-style these so-called free trade agreements that actually destroy the manufacturing base and destroy well-paying jobs in their own companies, in their own countries. So,
yep, I agree. Okay, so let me just ask you one last thing, which is on the dimension of open to new experience versus averse to new experiences, where would you put yourself on that continuum?
I like to think I'm open to new experiences to some degree, although in terms of new experiences, sometimes I can be rather conservative and cautious. I can be, I try to keep an open mind, but at the same time, there are times when I say to myself, I'd rather take the path already well-traveled.
Already well-traveled. Okay, so yeah. A bit of a mixed bag. Well, yeah. Thank you very for calling. It's really interesting because I think you have just described the classic liberal position on so many of these issues.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks for calling. So, again, we have a situation where you have somebody who pretty much on every policy issue lines up with this. And as a liberal, when you think about it, he's in favor of, path to citizenship for the folks that are already here. So, in other words, he doesn't define his in-group as citizens. He defines it as broader than that. And as long as they're not doing any harm, as long as he can trust them, he's fine with them staying. And that's the difference about immigration between liberals and conservatives, in my opinion. In my opinion, is that it has to do with how you feel about in-group, out-group, how you feel about justice, fairness, can I trust you? What are your thoughts on this when we come back here on The Samantha Clemens Show here on AM 1510 Revolution Boston? You're listening to The Samantha Clemens Show. You're listening to The Samantha Clemens Show. It's live. It's talk radio. It's the weekend. I really am here in the studio with Dave Steingesser, who is actually the guy who makes it all possible. Thank you, Dave. We're here. We're talking about immigration. We're talking about morality. We're talking about how personality and how you view the world morally has an impact on how you feel about important policy issues. And we're talking specifically about immigration today. But I think it goes further than that. It goes into tax policy. It goes into the health care bill. It goes into all kinds of different areas. Whether you're a liberal, whether you're a conservative, if we know certain things about your personality or preferences, we know, we have a very good intuition about how you're going to vote on certain policy issues. And we're studying the moral foundation theory put forth by Jonathan Haidt. And I wanted to give you a chance to listen to him in his own words talk a little bit about the differences between liberals and conservatives.
It really is a fact that liberals are much higher than conservatives on a major personality trait called openness to experience. People who are high on openness to experience just crave novelty, variety, diversity, new ideas, travel. People low on it like things that are familiar, that are safe and dependable. If you know about this trait, you can understand a lot of puzzles about human behavior. You can understand why artists are so different from accountants. You can actually predict what kinds of books they like to read, what kinds of places they like to travel to, and what kinds of food they like to eat. Once you understand this trait, you can understand why anybody would eat at Applebee's, but not anybody that you know.
Okay, so there you get an idea about, eating, which is, there are certain things that conservatives, I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up very, very far from any oceans. So the idea of eating a lot of seafood, honestly, for me, was kind of disgusting. that just filtered right into that. Did I think that it was immoral for people to eat that kind of seafood? Probably not. But think about the prohibition against pork. Two of the three major religions in the world have a prohibition against eating pork. And what's interesting about it is that there are a lot of people who think that that emanates from the concern about trichinosis. In other words, it was considered disgusting because you may get sick, which then became a moral issue. And this evolved in you know, potentially a fairly rural area. It was not people who were at the crossroads, perhaps. I'd actually have to go into my history to have a look at that. But beyond immigration, you know, or actually thinking about immigration, what is our obligation to the people who are already here? Again, conservatives say all that matters is that they broke the law. Liberals say, well, as long as they're not breaking any laws now, and as long as I can trust them, and as long as I can employ them, and as long as they pay taxes, what's not to like? But and the other thing that liberals have is do no harm. Is that for them, sending them back is doing them harm. Rounding them up and herding them out of the country is doing them harm. Whereas the way conservatives look at it is, by providing social services to these people who have broken the law, who are already out of the group, by taking from people in my group and giving it to people who are not in my group, that is immoral. It's not that it's impractical, although they sometimes use that as an argument, but to them it is clearly and blatantly simply immoral. So I kind of expand that to other policy issues, namely giving unemployment benefits to people, which is then people draw the in-group a little bit smaller. They draw the in-group to be people who work or people who they perceive as worthy of our kind of help. Part of the thing that's driving, I believe, the estate tax, the reason why conservatives want to eliminate the estate tax is because they feel that it is immoral to take anything away from that family's in-group to anyone else. They draw the in-group as the family. I mean, it's very tribal. It's very tribalistic. It's a very tribal way. And what Jonathan Haidt is saying is that, in fact, that has driven the success of human beings as a species around the world for tens of thousands of years. However, the one thing we liberals have in our favor, the thing that we can look forward to, is that the more interaction people have with each other, the more likely they are to dispense with these other three moral foundations. The more likely people are to focus on the first two, which is, can I trust you? Are you doing any harm? Well, what direction do you see the world taking these days? Globalization. People are on the move. People are moving to Europe. People are moving within Africa. People are moving within South America. People are moving between the continents. We're doing business all around the world. I mean, look at BP. BP is a company that has investments everywhere in the world. Same thing with Chevron. Same thing with Pepsi. Same thing with the banks. Companies are buying our companies here in this country. Anheuser-Busch is now owned by a Belgian company. And so what we're seeing is that the more interaction we have, this moral foundation's theory can predict that things are moving away from the conservative view of the world toward the liberal view of the world. So, yes, we're having these difficulties about immigration. And one final thing about immigration I wanted to say, which is, the citizens of Arizona are also in our in-group, aren't they? So conservatives would say that helping them resolve their issue of immigration is our moral obligation as a nation. And I believe that's why about 60% of Americans are sympathetic to their point of view, is that they say we have to help these Arizonans. And that also, I would think, would be a liberal value. But the way liberals want to solve the immigration problem is they want to make it better for people at home so that they don't have to do this horrible, risky thing of crossing the border in order to get to this country. Well, that's what I have to say today about morality and immigration. Thanks, Barry, for calling. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Enjoy this beautiful day, and I'll be back next Saturday a.m. at 10 o'clock on Revolution Boston. Have a great week.